Hi, everybody, and welcome back. We have our final session of this day.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
All right.
Breathe.
It's been a long day, hasn't it?
A lot of information.
Long night.
It's interesting when we take a jumpstart and take a 5 days of a mock course and put it into two. It's a lot of information we're trying to push in. So keep in mind, again, that there is additional information that is in the mock course that we don't include. Stuff as hands-on, being able to play with it, and at a slower rate and pace. So we highly encourage, if you need more information, to look into the training courses that are available specifically for 336 and 337. We also encourage and hope to remember to encourage you once again at the end of this module to look at the polls and make sure we hit our final poll for the day. I may forget to say it again, but in case we didn't, there we go.
I'll remind you.
Okay.
Hopefully. All right, let's move on. So last module, it's module 6. We're going to cover PSTN integration. All right, so we're going to talk about connecting to the PSTN because obviously we want to make sure we can make calls outside the enterprise. Otherwise, it's kind of useless. And we'll be talking about connecting to the existing PBX. You probably have a PBX if you haven't had the link deployed yet. And so we'll either connect to the PBX or you may choose a different option. We'll look at MN in inner working routing, and that's a new feature in 2013, and then call routing reliability. So let's go right to it. So connecting to the PSTN. So we'll cover some background definitions, the UC OIP, what that is, typical legacy enterprise PBXs, and then two decisions, whether you want to use your legacy PBX integration or you want to use a PODS, TDM, or SIP trunking. And then there's a direct connect through a gateway or through a SIP trunking. So there is multiple options for you in connecting your link environment to the PSTN. And that's what this module is covering. So before we get started, let's cover some definitions here so that we are all clear. So when we talk about PSTN, it's the public switch telephony network. So that's basically when you're making a call outside to any number. Whether it's a cell phone, a desktop phone, an 800 number, that's going to go through the PSTN.
Yeah, and the name comes from, if I recall correctly, the fact that there used to be big phone switches with operators pulling cords from one to the other to make the connection from caller A to caller B. So it really was a switch.
It was a manual
switch.
Oop, let's switch it in.
And so that whole network is where the PSTN role comes from. But that is when you think of dialing a phone number outside of anywhere. So
right. The next part, the next acronym here is PBX, so it's the Private Branch Exchange, and that's what you'll likely have in your environment in a corporation. You'll have a PBX that will connect your phone system, your PBX phones, to your PBX, and that PBX will then be connected to your PSTN. That's the existing systems, and Link 2013, 2010 and 2013 including, are really, an IP. It's an IP PBX replacement, so you can use it as that. Voice over IP, that refers to using voice over the IP network. And so instead of using the PSTN, it's actually going through the internet, through your network connections. And then SIP is the protocol that is used for signaling. It's the session initiation protocol that is used by Link to signal and establish calls between two parties, for establishing, for parking a call, setting up orbits, connecting to, doing simultaneous streaming, all those connections, there's two paths. One is the actual media, and then the other part is the signaling aspect of the call. So that's what the SIP protocol is used for. And then your ITSP, that's a generic term to refer to your service provider in essence. So it's your internet telephony service provider. That could be in the United States, it would be AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, for example. In Europe, it would be Orange, any of those that would provide your connectivity to the PSTN. So with that out of the way, let's cover briefly what the UC OIP is. That's the Unified Communications Open Interoperability Program. And that basically is Microsoft's way to qualify your gateways, your PBXs, and any other third-party products that need to be connected. And this is more specifically for the enterprise voice connectivity. So you have qualified gateways, and the way the OIP program works is you have qualified gateways, qualified PBXs, and then you have PBXs that are not qualified, but they are still supported. And there is a link at the bottom here on to get on where to get more information about which vendors are part of that program. So here you have a typical legacy enterprise PBX system. So in an enterprise that you have your PBX at the top here that's, well, here that's connected to your PSTN, and that will connect to all of your PBX phones. And so if you're making an outbound call, it's going to go through your PBX up to the PSTN. Inbound call will go through your PBX to the numbers. And so the PBX specifies a numbering plan, and then you have your class of services and dialing habits that you do. And so that's, for example, if you have to dial a 9 or a 5 to get a connection outside, that's how the PBX would operate. So here's another definition here. So if you're connecting your link environment to the PSTN, you have two possible options that's shown. So you can connect the link server directly to the PSTN, so this connection over here, and you still have your PBX that's connected over there. So there's essentially two separate systems that connect directly to the PSTN. The second option here is connecting a link to your legacy PBX. So when you have calls that are going out to the PSTN and actually hits your mediation server, and then it'll connect to your PBX, which then will egress the call out to the PSTN. But your PBX systems will operate the same way, so you don't actually have to re-engineer your PBX system. It can stay the way it is, and so it helps reduce the amount of complexity and the possibility of things breaking by not having to touch your PBX system on there. In both cases, that's the way. Mm-hmm. So another option here is to is a POTS, TDM, or SIP trunking. So you have your link servers over here. You got your mediation server, and it connects directly to a gateway. That gateway then connects to your PSTN. That's an option. The next option here is connecting with a SIP trunk. So you have your link servers connecting to a mediation server. It's going to cross over the internet through your firewalls, and it connects to your SIP trunk, which has its own mediation server here and its own gateway, which then connects it to PSTN. It is a really easy configuration. I particularly like it, and it's something that's very easy to set up. So that's an option to consider there. So then you have direct connect via gateway. So a gateway is a physical device that connects two incompatible networks. So on the PSTN, you have a whole set of different protocols, and of course on link side you got SIP that's used for signaling, and then you have the different media protocols that are used, in this case, and codecs that would be used. So there has to be a way to translate that, and so that's what your gateway serves, is it serves as a translator between two different languages, just like you have a translator translating from English to French, for example, or from two different languages there.
Because okay, because we're back to back on the link mediation server side, on the outside, that's the back side that we're kicking off to whatever external, will always be the G711 communication. So,
right.
If that's not what they're, and TCP, if they don't understand that, something's got to receive that and then turn it into something like G711 UDP or G729, maybe, if that's what they're doing in the cloud, whatever.
Right. And that puts a little bit of restrictions on the gateway that's supported, right? It has to support SIP over TCP. Over MTLS, and it needs to be able to support G711 on that part. But after that, whatever the gateway does to translate it to the native protocols, it can do on its own. And so that's why we have the list of supported gateways here, so that this interface here is understood by the link mediation server. That's what this part here is used for. So you have the SIP traffic here, and then you have your TDM traffic, which is specific for the PSTN. So now we can also do direct connect through SIP trunking. And so this is a way for your IP connections that establishes a SIP communication link between your organization and your ITSP, which is beyond your firewall. So it's nice because you don't actually have to put a gateway in your environment. Mm-hmm. It can be completely just link. And so it keeps your environment a lot simpler, less complexity. You have less servers and products to manage.
Right. Now, so from the SPC that's shown there, not to be confused, and the IP PSTN gateway that's in the picture, neither of those are yours. Those are outside the environment. You're talking directly via your firewall to some other ITSPs. SBC, and it's what's communicating directly with Link. So it's moving some of that hardware load to the outside. You're using the internet to get to it, right?
Exactly, yeah. Now, there is also other options, other configurations here that's possible. You could have the SBC as well over here, and so you can have two SBCs connecting, to, talking to each other across the internet. So there's other configurations. There's a good article that covers the different supported configurations on this if you look on NextHop. So you can find that there. That's NextHop is the basically the Link blog for all things
for Link.
For all things Link on TechNet. So that's another option. So it's really nice because here in your environment you just have your pools and your mediation server. You do have to have a separate mediation server for the SIP trunking, and it goes across the internet and hits the your service provider, which is over here. So that is a nice option. Particularly like it. The next type is connecting to your existing PBX. So probably might have made an investment on your PBX, and it's a large, substantial investment. So you don't want necessarily to just throw it away, particularly if you still have PBX's phones. At some point, as it reaches its end of life, that's maybe a decision you do it. But if it's still a good system and you want to be able to leverage it and end of life it slowly, then you probably want to connect your Link environment to your PBX. Otherwise, your PBX phones would not be able to call Link users and vice versa. So we want to be able to connect, and we can do that through a PBX via SIP. So, and then also you can, if the PBX supports the SIP protocol,
maybe,
so
right.
So you can do that if it's a supported PBX or a qualified PBX. The next option, if your PBX does not talk natively SIP and G711, the media
and TCP.
Protocol. And TCP over MTLS, right. Yes. So it's SIP over MTLS over TCP.
Right, but it can be just SIP over TCP. It doesn't have to be encrypted if you don't want it to be.
That's true. It doesn't have to be, yes.
Right. But if you are going to be on the OIP, then you are going to be able to secure the communications. The argument is, I've never secured my communications before. Why should I now? Well, just because you didn't lock the door last night doesn't mean you shouldn't today, but it really is your call, right? I mean, that's your prerogative. If you don't want to, you don't have to. When you leave Link, inside Link, we're always going to be secured. We're always going to be encrypted. It's always going to be.
I was going to say
you don't
that.
Have an option.
Yeah, I was going to say that. It's analogous to locking the door but leaving the window open, right? So your Link environment is all secure. All the traffic is encrypted and private. And then you got your connection from your mediation server to your gateway or PBX that it's insecure over TCP, and now everybody can just go look at it. So in those cases, what I suggest is putting that connection between the gateway and the mediation server on a private subnet so that it's not accessible. But if you can, or if the PBX is not supported by Link at all, then you probably would need to deploy a gateway to create that connection there between the PBX and and your Link environment.
And the important part about that, about the gateway part on that list, is in reality, nearly any PBX can connect to Link as long as there's a gateway mediating the communications and you have this correct communications in between the two. So there's gateways that exist, and the gateways that can talk QSIG, and so they can then make communications to a traditional PBX. They don't have to have anything to do with IP at all. That works. Or we can get third-party options that add on. Sometimes they're the manufacturer add-ons where you just have to license SIP. Really, there's so many different ways to do this, and it really comes down to what do you have, what hardware do you have,
and whether you want to make the investment.
Do we want to make the investment and dump the dollars,
exactly.
Or just dump it?
Yeah, right. Because it is an investment, right? So you have to have all these different systems that connect to each other. You got to understand how it all works and configures.
And support.
And support and getting it all working. So it is an investment. You have to decide whether you want to do it. And next, we'll look at the PSTN sizing, inner trunk routing, routing of IP PBX calls to the PSTN through Link, or routing of IP PBX calls to another IP PBX via Link. So Link sits is sandwiched between two IP PBX systems. And then we'll look at the mediation server and then talk about media bypass. So let's look at connecting through your PBX via SIP. So what this means here is that you got your Link environment, you got a mediation server, it's going to connect to your IP PBX here. So obviously it's going to be a qualified or a supported PBX. And all of your outgress, all your calls going to the PSTN will egress out of through your PBX, and all incoming calls will also ingress there. What this allows as well is that your PBX phones can talk to Link users and vice versa.
Right.
So that's a nice part about this
environment. And that PBX that we're talking to, whether it be mainstream PBX, non-mainstream, keep in mind that every version of these PBXs may or may not work. And so make sure you do check the online to make sure that the version that's been tested, the firmware version, the whatever version of that particular PBX is what will work and is supported.
It's supported, yeah. Otherwise, you're going to get into a world of hurt because it is a pain to try to get all those your different systems to interact with each other. Mm-hmm. And there are white papers delivered by the vendors, or some of them also through Microsoft as well, to help you with the depending on the scenario where you're at. So the next option here is to connecting through the PBX via gateway. So like we talked about, if this is a PBX that is unsupported, and that's an important aspect here, then you need to have a gateway that interconnects the link environment with your PBX system. And so that's the difference here. Again, now you have three environments. You got a link system, you got a gateway system, and you got your PBX system here. So three separate systems to manage and interoperate, so it adds more complexity. In terms of PSTN sizing, you need to also know, well, how much capacity do I need to have? And so when you're in a replacement scenario, it's easy to do that because you already have some background information. You have a history of call volume that is known, so you can base off your sizing off of historical volumes usage. So new features behaviors to take into account for sizing with Link is simultaneous ringing, so you want to look at that. PSTN conferences, dial-in audio conferencing, those will increase and impact your planning.
It's hard to put a number or an expectation around this without doing proper planning and making sure you're actually walking through things correctly. But keep in mind, once you now have features you didn't have before, which have the ability to just quickly and effortlessly create conference bridges, they're going to happen. Now, will that peak remain after the newness wears off? You know, you buy your child the new Easy Bake Oven. He only uses it for a month. And then now I have to make everything in the Easy Bake Oven just to keep my ROI, right? I mean, so it's not going to stay. You've got to figure out what makes sense. Where is the communication level going to maintain? And you're only going to find that out by getting a good sampling and a good... like we talked in 336, you have to plan, you have to sample, you've got to collect data, and then once you have the data, you've got to parse the data and then act on it accordingly. So.
Right. I mean, we're in the era of big data anyways, right? So all decisions, or a lot of people are talking about making decisions based off the data. So here's an example of doing that is you're going to base your information, your decisions off of call volumes and historical information that you have. Some things to help you leverage and make that decision is the Link Server 2013 planning tool. Definitely recommend using that. That's going to help you there. It's a starting point. Mm-hmm. Something is better than nothing all the time.
And it's a decent starting point. If nothing else, the planning tool allows you, and it's not nothing else, but it allows you to put in numbers and then adjust numbers and see what that means. So if my call volume went up 20%, what is that impact? If it went down 20%, what's that impact? Just knowing is better than not knowing. So
exactly. And then another recommendation is to use the Erlang B calculations. And these both are links here. So when appropriate, you can use that.
Well, and I will say from a exam perspective, know your Erlang B. Know what it is. Know how it looks. Know what it means for how many users per expectations. My personal world of experience, we use the pre-built calculators and they just dumps out our information for us. So is this something you need to memorize? Not necessarily, but do you need to know for the exam and be familiar?
Just a working knowledge about it.
Working and knowing how they work and how to adjust between the two. What the 0.01 versus 0.1, what that means. What are you actually losing? Know what the tool is and what the values
You need
represent.
To know how to interpret the data.
Yep.
Yeah, the information. Good. All right, so let's talk about inter-trunk routing. So what does that mean? So that means routing between PBXs into PBXs, peer-to-peer routing without links. So you have here in this environment where all the PBXs are in a star, configuration, they all talk to each other. This means, like, for example, you have a PBX in location A, PBX in location B, PBX location C. For example, if you have a store, let's say you're Walmart and you have a PBX in every store, this would be something analogous to what you would deploy there. Now, if you don't this creates a lot of complexity, because now you have to set up your dial plans and your routing rules for every single one of these PBXs, right? And so managing all that and keeping all that information in sync, you know, is complex. If you change a routing rule over here, do you need to change it over here, and vice versa? So you have to keeping all that information synchronized. Well, with Link, you can actually centralize that information. So you can actually put Link in the middle and your PBX is on the extremities. And so now what Link can do is it can serve as your intertrunk routing. So the routing from PBX A to PBX C will go through your Link server, and you can keep your routing rules between all of these PBXs centralized. And so that's one of the benefits there that's been introduced in 2013. That's really valuable.
A big difference.
Big difference, yeah. So if you're trying to maintain, you know, the investment that you have in your existing PBXs, that's an important aspect about Link Server. So the next part is routing of PBX calls to the PSTN via Link. So here, what we're looking at is you got your PSTN over here on the one side, and you got your pools here at the top, and you have your PBX system. So what it can do is actually through Link, you can route your PBX calls through your mediation server, and then it'll go through Link, and then the Link pool will have another mediation server that will egress the calls through another PBX system or gateway that then is connected to the PSTN. So that is kind of the connectivity here of your intertrunk routing.
And it also looks like we have a line, whether they intended to or not, of the media. Yeah, it says media, that we can do in this configuration. The idea is that the qualified PBX is doing media bypass. It's actually doing its media directly to the PBX or gateway, but the signaling is happening through the Link server. So we don't have to be involved in the call. It's bypassing those two mediation servers from a media perspective, and only signaling is happening through there. So the impact is minimal, yet our changing and our ROI, because we're managing all of those calls centrally within Link, is huge.
Right, exactly. And that's a nice part, is because the media is going direct, the impact on the Link server is minimal, because that's going to be the biggest payload there. The SIP traffic is fairly minimal compared to the media traffic. Okay, so now let's look at running the IPPX calls to another PBX through your Link. So again, here this is where that star configuration was that we looked at previously comes into play. So you got a PBX system over here on the left side and another PBX system on the right side, and your Link server or your Link environment interconnects those two systems.
Right, basically the same as the last time, just
instead of a PSTN connection,
we're just doing call to call.
And again, the media traffic is going direct between them. Okay, so mediation server. So there are some changes here. So you can either go with colocation or standalone. So what we mean by colocation is the mediation service can actually be colocated on your pool, on your front-end servers. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of helps, that actually helps reduce the number of server roles you have to manage, the number of servers you have to manage. So it's a nice simplification of the product for you. Now, on the other hand, if you're going to have a lot of load because the media traffic, for example, is going to go through the mediation server, then you probably want to keep it as a standalone system. Or if you're going to go with SIP trunking, then you need to have a mediation server that's standalone. So depending on what you're trying to do, you'll have to decide whether colocation is the way to go or standalone. But the option is there, which is nice. So standalone is, like I said, is preferred for network zone placement or workload isolation. So if the media traffic has to go through the mediation server, having a standalone mediation server is preferable. Also, if you're going to use media bypass and scalability, those are also items that you're going to take into account as to whether you're going to go colocation or standalone. So if with media bypass, it means that the traffic doesn't always have to go through the mediation server. So that relieves the amount of load that the mediation server has to have. And then for scalability, so if you're going to have a lot of traffic going through the mediation server, you can actually just beef up just that one standalone mediation server or that pool of mediation servers. So it gives you really a lot of flexibility in what you want to do there. The next step here is looking at pool versus single server. So if you're configuring your link pool for DNS load balancing, keep in mind for this is for SIP traffic. So you can actually go with DNS load balancing for SIP traffic, or you can go use a hardware load balancer for SIP traffic. The idea here is that for DNS load balancing for SIP traffic is just to keep things easy, because for hardware load balancers, you do have to have certain requirements that must be met for the hardware load balancer that you want to use. So that's something to look into. And then whether enterprise voice resiliency is important to you. So you'll want to look at those aspects.
Yeah, because pool pairing exists just like it did in 2010 with the additional features that we saw in 3.3.6 from a being able to keep the entire pool up, not just the voice side, but the voice is still all tied into it. So it's a one or nothing thing. If we're going to deploy pool pairing, we're going to do enterprise voice. I shouldn't say that. We don't have to do it, voice being part of it, but if we want voice, we're getting everything. So there you go. So it's all part of the configuration and the pool pairing and the DR plans and things of that nature. And then regarding HLB and DNLB, again, like we talked about in 3.3.6, it really comes down to requirements. The base requirements for link is, and the base recommendation is to do DNS load balancing. Let the clients load balance like they're designed to load balance. Hardware load balancers for web services only. However, if there are third-party or external communications or things that do not support DNS LB where HLB is required, so be it. Then you're gonna be going down that path. But if you have a choice, we cannot stress by any means heavy enough, go down the DNS LB path.
Yeah, it's certainly a lot easier. And you want to check if you're going to be using DNS load balancing, whether your gateway supports DNS load balancing for SIP as well. That's going to be an important part. So media bypass. So this is funny because this diagram here is actually from an article that I wrote. So it's funny to see it reappear here. And there's a link at the bottom for that particular article. So if you don't have media bypass, that means that not only is the signaling going through your mediation server, but the media traffic is going as well through your mediation server. So it does put a tremendous amount of load on your mediation server there. With media bypass, only the signaling traffic goes through your mediation server, and the media traffic can go directly to your gateway, to your IPPBX, or to your SIP trunk, which really makes it a lot more convenient. It reduces the workload on the mediation server, makes it
more efficient.
More efficient and a good candidate for co-locating the mediation server on your pool, your front end.
The link client doesn't only talk RT audio. It doesn't only talk Microsoft-specific protocols. It does talk G711, which is why this works. We can talk directly to gateways. We can talk negotiated protocols as part of the whole communication stack when we're doing our partner and client negotiations. So if we can leverage it, that's great. Keep in mind that media bypass means you're in the same physical network and the same subnet. There are specifications to make this happen, so it's typically within a building that this is going to work. But if it is configured to work, this is what you want to do. You do not want to be pushing media through. You're not gaining anything by putting the media via the mediation server. All the mediation server is doing is receiving your codec, transcoding it, pushing it back out for you. So nothing at all. So if we can, we want to do media bypass.
Yeah, whenever possible, that's preferable. It optimizes your network and reduces the load on your services.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's move on to MN interworking routing. So we'll cover some of the history, the trunk and IPPX interworking. Let's look at it in terms of real-life scenarios, some configuration details, trunk and resiliency, multiple sites, the same service provider, and then trunk definition, as well as auxiliary calling information there. So let's jump right into it. So let's take a look a bit at the history. So we actually wanted to do MN interworking routing since 2006, 2007. That was discussed, and we actually had a spec on it. But unfortunately, as with everything else, development resources were tight, and so we couldn't deliver it at that time frame. So at that time frame, what we were able to deliver was just one-to-one connections. So one mediation server associated with one gateway, and vice versa. So there was a one-to-one connection. And then in 2010, it was one-to-many. So that meant that, you know, one mediation server could connect to many different PSTN gateways. And then finally in 2013, where the full capabilities were introduced, you have many-to-many. So many mediation servers could connect to multiple mediation, to multiple gateways, and vice versa. So that gives you the full range and of capabilities and really the complexity. And the value proposition there is that now you have the ability to have fault tolerance connectivity to the PSTN. So what that means is that so if you have one mediation server and one qualified IP gateways, you can actually have multiple trunks to that IP PBX, as opposed to before where you can only have one.
And there's a lot of different. There are many different providers that their PBX requires such in order to talk to their MTPs that are all associated with their trunks. So while it may be the same IP that they're going to, maybe it's a different port, maybe it's something different, but it's all going to the same box for different communications, and now we fully support that.
Exactly. All right, so let's look at an example here. So here we have a mediation server on the left side, mediation 10, and we have a IPPBX gateway on PBX 10 on the right side, and you can see here that there are two trunks that are connected here. So you got trunk 1, which is on port 5060, and it's got a media IP of MTP1, and then you have the second trunk here, which is on port 5061 and on MTP2. So you can see there's two different trunks over here, and it's actually also configured for media bypass on the client side. So when a client connects to your to the PBX, it'll connect to the mediation server to the PBX, and the media can go traverse directly between the media, between the client and the mediation server. So let's look at the configuration details. So, well, you can configure it through Topology Builder as well as Windows PowerShell. So looking at Topology Builder, we want to define your PSTN gateway or trunk. Now, these are going to be definitions, so they're not going to be directly associated to the gateway, but is a representation of that gateway or trunk in the PBX world, in the link environment. So that's where you define your MTP as the alternate media IP address, and you specify, use different gateway listening ports for each trunk. And so that way, when you establish a connection or a trunk between a mediation server and a gateway, it knows which ports and which IP address to connect to. Right. So it knows how to find.
Because otherwise, if you think about it, it's no different than
Exchange M.
Think about a house with three-car garage. If you're going to go park at that garage and you weren't told which slot to park in, 1, 2, or 3, how do you know which one to go to? And that's all our ports are doing. We're all going to the same place. But where at that place are we going to? What's the differentiation? And the differentiation happens to be the ports. So while we're all going to 10.0.0.10, we're going to 10.0.0.10 5060, 5061, 5062, 5063, and that's what differentiates the MTPs on that particular gateway, which allows us to support it without having to make fake names, which is what we had to do in 2010.
Right, that's how you allow supporting multiple trunks.
Yep.
And we're actually going to cover that not the next slide, but the following one after that, I believe. So the next option here is you can also configure it through Windows PowerShell, and you can identify the trunk IDs, and there's all kinds of information there.
Well, and part of that is when you're in the Topology Builder, you can define a single alternative media IP. And what that's for is for your media bypass and for your communications. You cannot do that for any of the additional trunks that are on that singular one. So you have to use PowerShell for this to work. FYI, it's one of those things where initially some stuff we can do through the GUI, other stuff we do through PowerShell. You have to create them in the Topology Builder first and publish them before we can modify them. They have to be existing trunks and gateways that exist, but once they're actually there, we can go and set the alternate media IPs on them using PowerShell.
Good. All right, so what's the value proposition really here for supporting multiple trunks on through multiple gateways and multiple mediation servers? Well, this diagram helps illustrate that. That helps create resiliency. So if you have a mediation server 1 and mediation server 2, that's a typo there, and they're connected to the same gateway, if one of these gateways, mediation servers, goes down, the other one is still available to connect to your gateway. So that is nice. Likewise, if you have, you can also have create resiliency at the gateway layer. So if gateway 1 goes down, you're still able to connect to the PSTN through gateway 2. And so that's the ability for you to do that. And so you could actually have a mesh here so that both mediation servers connect to both gateways and vice versa. And so that allows you to have the ability to create resiliency on there. So that's a big value proposition because, as we know, voice communication is important, right? So if it goes down, people start yelling about it. And so you want to be able to create as much resiliency as possible in the least amount of hardware possible. So this is a good example of that. All right, so multiple sites, the same service provider. So here what you can see is you have site 1 and site 2. They both have a mediation pool here, and they have a trunk to your MPLS, and that connects to the SBC, which then connects you to the PSTN. So they connect through the same provider here for ingress and egress calls.
Yeah.
Now, of course, keep in mind, if you use a single provider and that service provider goes down, both sides lose connectivity to the PSTN. But you know,
it really depends on your ITSP. So we ran into this a lot in 2010 when you had multiple sites, and they were close sites, and we wanted them to go to a single ITSP. They may provide multiple ones. Like when we're working with IntelliPeer, we may get an LA, we may get a Chicago, we may get a New York location. It's great. But maybe everybody I have is in the West, and I want them all to start off going to the West. They've got their own internet connections at those businesses. In 2010, there was no way without creating host records and DNS entries and things to trick Link to go to the same IP address from two different mediation servers within the same configuration or two different sites. In 2013, we get rid of the trickery, and we can just do it directly, and it makes it so we can do meshes with ITSPs as well. So maybe each one of those, maybe we have a call center in the East, one in the West, and one in Central North America. Central North America's primary talks to Central North America's location of IntelliPeer, and his backup is LA, his tertiary is New York. Maybe LA's primary is LA, his backup's New York, and his tertiary is the Midwest. And then, again, we go to New York and do the exact same thing. So we get this intertwined mesh of multiple ways, multiple routes, and we're not worrying about names anymore. We're not worrying about issues of there being conflicts, which we were before.
Exactly. So that's a nice benefit there. So Brian touched on this a little bit. So how does it look in your topology builder? Well, a trunk is defined basically by a mapping or an association of your gateway and your mediation server. And what specifically are we talking about? Well, initially in 2000, in OCS 2007, it was just the FQDN of both of these servers, and that only allowed for a one-to-one connection. And then with the addition of a port, now you have a tuple here. This tuple uniquely identifies the trunk on the gateway side, and this tuple here identifies the trunk on the mediation server. So that trunk consists of that particular mapping. And you can see here that your PSTN gateways are listed here in your topology builder. And you can see all the information here about the trunk. You got the gateway information, the mediation server, the site. And here in particular at the trunk is a definition where you can see this pair. So you see the name of the trunk. You see the gateway FQDN here, the listening port at which it listens, the protocol in which it's going to use, and then the second pair here, which is the mediation server FQDN and the port it uses.
Yeah, think of PSTN gateways, that link of the physical devices we're going to be using. Think of the trunks as the definition of what physical gateway we're tying to which physical mediation server.
Exactly.
And over what ports.
Exactly. It's a tie, right? You're creating that association, and that's what a trunk is.
And those trunks are what we're referring to within the control panel when we're tying call routes.
Exactly.
Not the gateways, it's the trunks.
Now, you know, historically, trunk used to refer to an actual physical connection, right? In this case, it's just a logical connection,
right?
So there is no physical connection between the two. So let's talk about auxiliary calling information here. So here you got an incoming call from a PSTN phone. It comes to your link server, and it reaches to your link client. So this call here is from the phone number 555-2001, and it's calling 555-0200. When it reaches Bob, which is the phone number that is associated with him, the 200, he has also his call, he's set up for simultaneous ringing, and it will simultaneous ring 555-1000. And so the link server will also simultaneously ring that phone number, which happens to be a PSTN phone or mobile phone, looks like. And so here you can see in the history of the SIP traffic, the SIP message, that the history here, and I've highlighted in red, that the call came from 1000, which is, came from 2001, which is this caller here, and it is sent to 1000, which is being routed to the secondary number, the simultaneous ring. But you can see here in the history information that it was originally called, it was originally calling 200. And the reason why of the target is because it was being forwarded.
All right. So that's where we get the additional piece of information in the history, so that when we're going to a provider on the outside, we get the original calling history, which means that it originated inside. It's just got a caller ID. Not spoof's the wrong word, but it's showing who it originally is calling that we're doing a SIM ring. And that diagram, I think, is a little misleading. It's not like we hit the link client, and the link client then tells us the SIM ring. That setting is obviously within the link server, so it comes directly from the link server directly out when he's simultaneously ringing, and he's ringing the link client simultaneously as well.
Exactly.
But, it looks like he's going somewhere.
Yeah, it looks like he's going. It's not. It's actually just simultaneously happening.
Right.
So, all right. So let's cover call routing reliability. So we have fast failover, options polling, call routing reliability. It can be lost connections, gateway down, reliability, retries, and next hop proxies, and then we'll look at voice routing coexistence. All right, so fast failover and options polling. So the gateway has a log. You can see the SIP traffic here, and the mediation server has its own log here. And you can see that these two SIP messages are related to each other because of the call ID.
Mm-hmm.
That's been highlighted there, so you know how to associate the two. And you can look at the user agent, where you can see the call is coming from the mediation server. And here, in this case, the call is coming from the audio codes gateway. And then you can see that the response here was 200 OK, so it looks good. And so that's some of the information there to see what's happening.
And if you think of options, think of it as a heartbeat. All we're doing is we're sending out, and we're expecting the gateway to send out heartbeats as well, so that we know it's alive. We know that it's up. We're sending them out. Do you hear me now? And then the gateway is sending back, do you hear me now? So that's where you get this back and forth response, and that way we can tell, is the gateway up? If it doesn't send back a response after such many failed attempts, we're going to mark the gateway down. I think it's 5.
Exactly. Yes, 5. Yeah. And so that's what the option is there for. It's this ping, right? It's this ping over
SIP.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a ping over SIP. And that's what this diagram is showing. So call routing reliability. So what if a connection goes down? So let's look at this diagram here. So you have a mediation server here and a mediation server there. And you have your front-end servers. Your SIP traffic is visualized through this dotted blue line here. And you have that traffic. And now here you have your set of trunks, right? So you have mediation server 1 that's connected to gateway 1 as well as gateway 2. Mediation server 2 is connected to gateway 1 and gateway 3. So if gateway 2 is no longer accessible and there's a problem, well, the connection can be rerouted through this option over here. And for example, if the trunk, there's an issue with the option here because it's not getting the option properly, but the gateway is still up, then Link may think that gateway 2 may not be accessible from this mediation server, but it's mediation server 2 believes that the gateway is still up because it's getting the connection, so then the call can be routed to that gateway 1 through mediation server, even though it's not going to be routed through mediation server 1. All right. So let's look at another example here. In the case that gateway is down. So now if gateway 1 is down, and the connectivity between gateway 1, obviously gateway 1 to mediation server 1 and 2 are going to be down, these two connections. But gateway 2 is also having difficulties telling mediation server 1 that it's up. Well, then in that case, the call can be routed through mediation server 2 through gateway 3. And so the call can still egress out to the PSTN in that order. Okay. All right, so this is what it looks like when you have reliability and retries. So from Link Server 2010, you have the front-end server here, the mediation server, and then the gateway. It will send an invite, and then the mediation server will respond with 183 if the connection is, and then it will try the connection, and the connection will fail. With Link Server 2013, the front-end server will send an invite to the trunk. You'll get a 183 response. If the connection is not good, it fails.
Then, or expires.
Or expires, yes. Mm-hmm. The front-end server, like in the case of expires, in this case, the front-end server will send a cancel to the mediation server and then retry the invite with specifying a second trunk, mm-hmm. which is connected to that particular mediation server. The response to the mediation server is 183 again and sends the invite to the gateway, which then will respond and you're connected.
Yeah, and of course this all is under the assumption you have multiple gateways and multiple trunks and things to go out over. If you only have one and it's down, then it's down.
Yeah, multiple trunks to the same gateway and the same mediation server is not going to really help you there. Because like we said, it's just a logical connection. So let's look at next hop proxy. So mediation server tracks its next hop proxy and backup next hop proxy by sending out periodic option pools. That's what we were talking about. So the backup next hop proxy is defined by the pool pairing. Mm-hmm. I mentioned that as well. And if the primary next hop proxy is found to be down, and we talked about the failure rate of five option pools in a row. So if all five fail, then the mediation server will deem that next hop proxy or that gateway to be down. So then at that point, new invites from the gateway are sent to the backup next hop proxy. So additionally, there's a 10-second timer that is used for incoming calls. So if the primary next hop proxy is used for a call and no SIP response is received within that time frame, the call is rerouted to the backup proxy. So a lot of text in there. But that should help. So these two sets of tables are pretty complicated, but you can certainly take a look at it. But what this shows really essentially is that this particular configuration here of a home server and mediation server. So a home server that is a 2007 R2 with a mediation server 2013 is not supported. But basically all the other configurations are supported. Obviously you want to be as much as possible on the latest version or the versions that are connected, that are similar to each other. So 2013. But it also works with 2010 as well.
And that's where the question that came in today, can I use an SBA that's a 2010 with a 2013? Well, sure. We support 2013 talking to a 2010 mediation server and vice versa, so that's not a problem. So you'll just have users that are registered, and that register is a 2010 users, not 2013.
Exactly. Good. And that covers it. So thank you very much. And don't forget, please do your polls.
The poll, I forgot. So don't forget, before you leave today and sign up, please look at the polls, get your final polling in, and then we'll see you back again tomorrow, same time, and we'll
same
go
bad
from there.
Time.
Same bad time, same bad channel.
That's right.
All right, thanks, everyone.
All right, thanks.